This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of LGIM Talks, where we'll be discussing some of the stewardship activities we undertook last year. This podcast coincides with the publication of our 13th annual active ownership report. 2023 was another challenging year in markets, marked by geopolitical conflict, inflationary pressures, and rising interest rates. A series of extreme weather events during the hottest year on record also underscored the climate crisis. Rapid advances in AI, meanwhile, held the promise of productivity gains, but also raised fears of a new generation of digital threats. Against this backdrop, how did we strive just to create sustainable value for our clients? We continued to push for positive changes on environmental, social, and governance issues, whether through our extensive climate impact pledge or the work we did through our global research and engagement groups, known for short as the GREGs. We launched an engagement campaign focused on the living wage, published our first human rights policy, and strengthened our deforestation policy. We also worked with companies and policymakers aiming to ensure that AI develops safely. In the built environment, we strengthened the governance processes that guide our handling of sustainability matters in private markets, building on the framework that was already in place for public markets. To learn more about all these initiatives and many more, let's meet our experts today, who will be talking to me, Harry. They are Michael Marks, our Head of Investment Stewardship and Responsible Investment Integration, Xuan Chan, Head of Responsible Investment and Sustainability in LGIM Real Assets, and Madeline King, our Head of Research Engagement for Investments. Michael, when we talk about active engagement, what do we really mean?
Well, thank you, Harry. It's a privilege for us to look after our clients' assets. And as investment stewards, we're striving for improvements across markets for all of the investments in our clients' portfolios. Active ownership means aiming for raising market standards and best practice. We do that through engagement, talking with regulators and policymakers. If we can get the legislation framework right, then companies will change and meet those standards. We also talk to the boards of companies that we're invested in and to the executives of those companies. We share our expectations of how they can improve their businesses, and we use all the tools at our disposal to influence for those changes. We believe if we can get to the right place, this will lead to long-term sustainable returns for our clients. Engagement is about transparency. With our investee companies, it can be a conversation. It might be an email. It may be using our voting rights. We might put in place a resolution at the AGM, or ultimately publicly disinvesting from a company through our climate impact pledge.
So having read the report, I understand that last year you reviewed the team's themes for engagement with companies and policymakers, and you now have six super themes for engagement. Could you tell us what these are and how you chose those six themes?
Of course. Well, as you say, we reviewed where we were and looked at long-term issues that we believe will lead to those long-term outcomes. Climate, striving for that 1.5 degree world, where we all recognise today how important climate change is, both as risks to our future outcomes, but the opportunities for investment. Nature is a new topic for many people to think about, but ultimately the economies and many companies are reliant on natural products, on water, on grain, on products from nature, and therefore the concept of their economic outcomes mean that we have to think about the natural world. The human capital that companies use, every employee, thinking about people and the related issues. Health, where we all experienced COVID and the impact on the economies of a disease such as that. Longer-term diseases could impact economies to a much greater extent, and we can see things like that. We can see the impact of nutrition and the costs to businesses of absenteeism and presenteeism being very high. So therefore, health issues are extremely important to us. I wouldn't want to forget some of the traditional topics that we call governance. Well-run companies generally deliver better outcomes. And you mentioned AI. Well, AI is a topic that we're all focused on, and how those companies who are producing AI think about the governance of that, and those companies using AI think about how they use it, will be critical for the future.
A huge range of important topics that you touched on there. Madeline, I wonder if I can bring you in here and ask you about, when it comes to implementing these principles, how is that actually done?
So first of all, yeah, those are all absolutely important topics. And what I would say is, anything that is important to us as a firm from a stewardship point of view is also really important from an investment point of view as well. And one thing we've really found is, you already mentioned the Global Research and Engagement Groups, affectionately known as the GREGs. Ever since we made that concerted effort to collaborate more closely across investments and stewardship and really share our kind of best knowledge and best practices across all the various industries, what we found very naturally was, as soon as we tasked people with thinking about the long-term threats and opportunities in the industries that we invest in, we very naturally started to think about these long-term ESG themes. So there's a real commonality, I think, across the two parts of our business, in terms of what we are concerned about, where we think the opportunities and threats are. But obviously, these are all very, very complicated themes. Anything by definition, if it's sort of long-term in nature, is quite difficult to implement on a short-term basis. So the way we reflect these across portfolios is really different. Our different portfolios will have very different ESG characteristics. Some will be very, very stringent and very based on our overall views of ESG, and some will be much more relaxed is slightly the wrong word, but you know, maybe more driven by kind of index constituents or so on. But one thing that is really common across everything is that where we are talking to companies from an investment point of view, we want to be giving those companies the exact same message that they would hear if they were to meet with one of our stewardship colleagues. So really kind of investments and investment stewardship coming together around those themes, we think, is really, really important. I think I would say the key difference on the investment side is we would naturally, you know, we think more about sort of financial materiality and how is this going to hit the P&L and the cash flows and the balance sheet. But all of those themes, I still think, are, you know, just as important to us, but maybe from a slightly different angle. A really good example of that at the moment is the water companies. So something we talk about in detail in our active ownership report this year, and something that's really come into the news recently as well. So pretty topical. But the stewardship angle and the ESG angle is very much around the sewage and various pollution issues that these companies are having. But we've also got a massive financial materiality issue. Balance sheets are a mess. All of the capex needed to fix these ESG issues is a financially material problem and is really directly driving our decisions to invest or not invest in these companies. So the two are kind of different sides of the same coin and sit very closely together. So I think, wherever we're talking to these companies about any of these themes, the important part is that all parts of LGIM are on the same page on what the important message is.
So the report obviously touches on a wide range of different asset classes, equities, bonds. Xuan, if I can bring you in here, real assets are a bit different, but they're still an essential part of our efforts to push for positive change. And the AO report highlights the growing importance of nature and biodiversity in particular. Can you tell us a bit about what that means from a real assets perspective and highlight any initiatives from 2023 that you felt particularly important?
Well, in 2023, we continued to drive significant progress in achieving our climate commitments through decarbonisation initiatives across our real estate equity portfolios. And that's demonstrated through our net zero carbon roadmap update, which is shared in the report. And whilst climate is one of our core pillars, we recognise that nature's role is a vital part of the climate solution. So from a real assets perspective, we believe that addressing nature and biodiversity loss enables us to address a significant number of outcomes in addition to addressing the climate crisis. For example, nature is very much part of placemaking within the real asset sector. And by creating green infrastructure and providing access to green space and nature, that has a direct impact on mental and physical health and well-being. It also improves air quality, and you can also use nature to support flood resilience. In Elgin Real Assets, our real estate portfolios are subject to new regulatory planning permissions in the UK to meet a minimum of 10% biodiversity net gain, or BNG. And that starts from January 2024 this year. And this can be achieved on-site, off-site, or through what's called statutory credits, biodiversity credits. So biodiversity net gain is really an approach to creating and improving natural habitats. It's applied in the context of development and or land management, and it aims to achieve a measurably positive impact or net gain on the natural environment compared to what it was beforehand. So why is this important to us? Well, as an asset owner and developer, we are responsible for over 19 billion sterling in UK real estate equity assets. And that includes an increasing pipeline of new development assets. So in 2023, we very much focus on aligning our new developments with this biodiversity net gain planning requirements and have developed a new guidance to support implementation of these regulations from this year. I've mentioned what we're doing across our real estate portfolios. Let me cover a little bit about what we've been doing in our private credit portfolios. In 2023, we were the cornerstone investor in the largest Debt for Nature swap to the government of Ecuador. So Debt for Nature transactions are essentially a form of blended finance structure. It enables a country to refinance its debt under more favorable terms and allocate a proportion of its proceeds towards specific nature or environmental related outcomes. I summarize it into sort of three components that make up these Debt for Nature transactions. The first is about restructuring the sovereign's capital structure. These sovereigns, these governments, are typically in emerging markets. They undertake these transactions because they are usually suffering from a high proportion of debt to GDP with expensive debt servicing costs. The second component is around a form of payment guarantee structure. And what that means is that sovereign will work with structuring banks, government agencies, multilateral agencies to provide guarantees or insurance in the event of a non-payment of those loans. This form of blended finance really combines private capital with public or donor funding, and that brings down the risk profile of the transaction to invest in green or outcome-driven projects. The final component is around nature positive outcomes. And that means working with leading conservation organizations to set milestones to demonstrate performance against specific environmental or biodiversity commitments, or otherwise they will incur financial penalties. So for the Ecuador transaction, essentially a proportion of debt proceeds will go towards marine conservation to what's called the Galapagos Life Fund. And that will better support biodiversity in this very critical aquatic ecosystem. In the transaction, it was structured between Ecuador's advisors, which was a global investment bank, the conservation organization, and it was insured by the US government. And that allowed Ecuador to restructure its debt at much lower repayment rates. And in return, Ecuador will direct savings of over $450 million to enhance the management of marine resources and promote sustainable fishing over the next 18 years to support biodiversity and prevent habitat loss around the Galapagos Islands. And that's home to more than 3,000 species, 20% of which are not found anywhere else on this planet. So as part of this transaction, Ecuador is targeting 18 milestones to demonstrate its sustainability performance, and that's verified by an independent assessor, and it's also reported publicly.
Thank you, Xuan, for that explanation. Madeline, I mentioned at the top of this podcast that AI became really big news last year, and of course it falls within the digitization super theme that Michael mentioned earlier on. There are hopes that it will drive long-term value creation, but also concerns around data privacy, intellectual property, workforce transitions, among other things. Can you tell our listeners how we see AI from a stewardship perspective and what we're doing to try to steer this technology in the right direction?
Sure. So AI is, huge theme. No shortage of press coverage, I think, and something that we've spent a huge amount of time on from an investment point of view. I think what's really important is that we are still in the relatively early stages of AI development. Some really kind of big steps forward, and a huge amount of investment has been made over the last few years, but still probably a lot more to come. And I think from an investment point of view, the most important thing is I think we need to retain a certain amount of humility in not pretending that we can predict the future on this one. And who may look like the winner today may not actually be the winner in the long term. If there's one thing that we've seen time and time again with these big technology transitions, it's that we can't always, the first person involved isn't necessarily the long-term winner, and it's it can be very, very difficult to predict who the ultimate beneficiaries will be. I think what we've also learned from previous technology transitions is industries not necessarily directly involved, but can be very, very easily displaced or fundamentally transformed in various ways. And AI, we think, is no different there. So very important from an investment point of view that we keep on top of the various developments related to AI. But working with stewardship, we think that, as you mentioned, this is one of our top six priorities, and very rightly so, because we think it's really important that we sort of start to establish baselines for companies in terms of the data we want to see, the transparency we expect from them, because this will become a big risk management topic for really the majority of industries that we invest in. And again, we're in the very early stages. So what that data ends up looking like, you know, we don't know yet. So it's also very important for us to work with sort of the data providers, the regulators. It's really about the whole investment and company ecosystem. So we really want to be a part of that. So involved in consultations and, you know, various other ways to improve market standards. But yeah, I think the main point is just we need to evolve as the technology evolves. So this is one that I'm sure we'll be talking about for many, many years to come.
I expect next year it'll turn up again in the years afterwards too. I'd like to end the podcast by reiterating a huge amount of investment stewardship activity that's been captured in the report, and most importantly, saying a big thank you to everyone who contributed to it. We've really only scratched the surface in this podcast recording today. So if you'd like to learn more about our stewardship activities in 2023, as well as our plans for this year and the years to come, please visit lgym.com/active-ownership, where you can read the full report and find out far more about all of the work that went on. And a big thanks to Madeline, Xuan and Michael, and to all of our listeners at home.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the license corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.